earlier this week, I think it was this week, maybe last week, I heard a little short talk, a couple of minutes, from Gil Fronsdahl. Some of you may know who he is. He teaches up in Redwood City, California, in Insight Meditation Society and Insight Retreat Center. IMS is back east. And he was talking about in meditation, similar to the intention in our practice this afternoon, the intention to connect with stillness and know what that's like. He was talking about connecting with the desire to experience loving kindness, to experience friendliness, and to know what that feels like, to have that desire and to experience it, especially around kindness, compassion. It's important to recognize these experiences when we have them. And he was talking about desire, and one of the things I want to say, oftentimes desire, and I've heard teachers say this, that desire is bad, or sometimes students think that desire is bad in Buddhism, that we have to get rid of all our desires because it causes suffering. And that's not true, because there is the desire to practice. There's wholesome and unwholesome, skillful and unskillful. So there's the desire to practice. There's the desire to not cause harm. There's the desire to be compassionate. There's all these really wholesome things that are we can have desire around. It's when they kind of lean into compulsive, obsessive, gotta have it, gotta. Attachment, can't let it go when it passes, because everything passes, because there's impermanence. That's when it's not, that's what we want to let go of. So desire can be really helpful and really wholesome. And so that's what we want to move towards, these things. We want to identify these things that we think are valuable, that will take us away from suffering, that will lead us towards this freedom from craving, freedom from aversion. And I like that. I like that intentionality of knowing what is important and getting a sense of it. And so that got me thinking about intention, not just connecting with desire, but connecting with intention, which is really important. It's part of the Eightfold Path. Wise intention is the second factor of the Eightfold Path. The first factor is seeing things clearly, wise view, understanding that things are impermanent. There is discomfort in our lives. We are conditioned beings, understanding the nature of suffering, that it is caused by craving, wanting what we want, wanting pleasant all the time. But there's also a path away from it, a path towards freedom and liberation. And intention is setting our sights to move towards what is wise, what is skillful, what is wholesome. And inside wise intention in the Eightfold Path is this willingness to live with goodwill and friendliness towards all, to live with this compassion, to have a compassionate heart. It's not just the wise side. There's also the compassionate side. There's the mind and the heart that work in unison. And also a part of wise intention is renunciation, which is basically just letting go of what doesn't serve us, letting go of what is unskillful, unwise, what causes harm. That's what renunciation is. It's not about being mindful. It's letting go. Pointing back to what I said earlier about Ajahn Chah, letting go a little piece, letting go completely, complete peace. So renunciation is a practice of letting go. And cultivating intention, cultivating what's wise. And when I was thinking about these intentions, it also got me thinking about a talk I gave back in 2011, because I still have my notes and it says 2011. So that would be 2011. What was that, 12 years ago? About why intention and a container for intention called the paramis. And I know we've talked about the paramis or the paramitas on Sundays, but I think it's been a couple of years, and they're one of my favorite teachings. In Theravada tradition, there are 10 paramis. In Mahayana tradition, there are 6 paramitas. And so I want to talk about the 10 paramis because I'm in the Theravada tradition, which is early Buddhism. Mahayana is a little bit later Buddhism traditions. And the paramis are these 10 qualities that are said to be necessary for liberation, for freedom, that you need to develop these particular qualities. And Tanisaro Bhikkhu, many of you know him, Tan Jeff, a monk near San Diego, he says that they're a useful framework for developing a fruitful attitude towards our daily activities. They're a framework from which we can move through the world. And they're really helpful for householders, folks who are not monastics. And I think we're all householders here. We're all lay people. None of us are monks or nuns. And so we have a very different set of experiences from monastics. And so these are qualities that can support us as we move through life in a way that's wise and helpful and skillful and wholesome and takes us, moves us towards where we want to go. Sylvia Boorstein wrote a book on the paramis called Pay Attention for Goodness Sake. And she said that they are the natural inclination of the human heart. When we get rid of all these stories, when we begin to disentangle ourselves from our conditioning, from our familial conditioning, from societal conditioning, we have these beautiful qualities that can show up. Because the conditioning is what leads us towards craving, aversion. I want that. That's the judging mind. That's good. That's bad. You're good. You're bad. I'm good. I'm bad. All those things. When they start to fall away, we have this bubbling up of these beautiful qualities. And I should probably say what they are because I tend to blah, 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 blah. But so let me just list them very quickly, and then I'll talk more about them in a minute. And some of them are really familiar because you've heard these before. Generosity, virtue, sila, living with integrity, renunciation. I just mentioned that. Wisdom. I mentioned that also. Energy, virya, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity, which seem to be part of many, many, many Buddhist lists. And the Buddha, in the suttas, the paramis are not taught as such. He didn't give this list of 10 qualities. They're a little bit later. And it's said that the Buddha lived many lives. In some traditions, it says he's lived 86,000 lives. And there are these set of tales called the Jataka tales, which are, again, a later set of tales that are like fables, and they kind of point to his experiences in prior lives working with these different qualities. So all that is to say that these things take time. I think a lot of the Buddhist teachings point to this takes time, multiple lifetimes. You're not going to get it overnight. You have to be willing to stay the course. And so it's I think, a really helpful list. And it's not as many of the lists are. Some of the lists are linear, but like the Eightfold Path is not linear. You don't, like with the paramis, you don't start at generosity and then get really good at generosity and then move on to the next one and then get really good at that and then move on to the next one. You start where you are. That's such an important thing to remember in these teachings, is start where you are. What's causing you discomfort or difficulty today? Not, oh, I want to be a good Buddhist, so I'm going to start over there. And it's like, that's an intellectual exercise that may not serve you in your day-to-day existence. Serve you with what's causing you discomfort in this moment. What is that? That's where the practice is. That's where you start. And And you may find that patience is really challenging for you, but some of the other qualities are very supportive of that. So you can, you know, say patience is what gives me the most trouble, but you find it being supported by these other things. And effort or determination or loving kindness. One of the, as I mentioned, the last of the paramis is equanimity, which is the last of many lists. And it's this ability to be with whatever is present, to greet whatever arises with balance and the appropriate response. Equanimity holds them all. And it kind of points us where we're headed. It's the intention. It's the desire. We have a desire to live in a way that's equanimous, to have this equanimity, which is somewhat what I was pointing to in the meditation instructions, this stillness, when we're not knocked over by the worldly winds, which is a teaching on equanimity. There's praise, there's blame, there's pleasure, there's pain, there's gain, there's loss. This happens. How do we hold ourselves? How do we react or respond when we're greeted by loss? When we're greeted by pleasure? When we're greeted by joy? When we're greeted by sorrow? And so these paramis, these qualities, can support us. And as we develop them and cultivate them, we move towards equanimity. We move towards equanimity. So let me go through these a little bit and kind of touch on each of them. And I invite you to see where these land for you, which ones resonate, which ones don't resonate, because that's the beauty of these teachings. And the Buddha taught in so many different ways and for so many different audiences that what works for some people may not work for other people, which is why I think it's lovely that there's so many flavors of Buddhism. There's the Theravada, there's Zen, there's Mahayana, there's Tibetan, there's Vajrayana, there's all these, there's Pure Land, there's all kinds of flavors that work with different individuals. And they all have these core teachings in common. And so to find what works for you, what makes sense, is really, really important. And so I just want to touch on these. And so the first one is generosity. And we've talked about generosity, being generous, a lot. In fact, in a lot of countries where Buddhism is a major religion and there's a Buddhist culture, generosity is taught before meditation. In fact, the first two paramis, generosity and virtue, sila, are taught before mindfulness because generosity is an antidote to clinging. And if clinging is the real root of our suffering, then to start with that antidote at the outset is really helpful. How do we have an open heart? It's not just monetary generosity, it's the whole gamut of generosity. It's generosity of spirit, generosity of time, generosity of our presence. Can we listen to someone who's having a hard time? Can we take someone to go shopping? Can we pick somebody up at the airport? All these things, you know, are we being generous? Are we being open-hearted, or are we taking? And this kind of is the flip side of the precept of not taking what's not offered. You know, to cultivate, if you don't take what's not offered, if you take what's not offered, and again, it's not just stuff, it's not just money or things. It's like, are you holding somebody hostage? Are you in a relationship long past the time it should be over? You know, do you take advantage of other people's generosity? Or do you impose yourself? I mean, these are questions. It's not just, as I said, it's not just generosity. So how do we open up? I think Pema Chodron said we have such a fear of lack. We live in a society that has created this idea of lack, that there's only a finite amount of everything. Some things there is a finite amount of, but this is just like finite. And if you don't get yours, you're going to lose out. And so we are living in this place of, I got to hold on. We live in a society that supports clinging and craving. And so to disengage from that is really important. And again, as I said, it's the antidote to fear. It's the antidote to greed. And then the second one, as I said, is also virtue, integrity, ethical behavior is also an important part of the Eightfold Path. It's wise action. It's an important part of the teachings in communities that are predominantly Buddhist inspired. It comes before mindfulness. How do you live in the world? How do you live with integrity? Can you live in a way that doesn't cause harm? That's a whole section of the Eightfold Path, is how to live in a way that doesn't cause harm. Not just, you know, killing or physical harm, but by your behavior. You know, how are you making people... I heard Ruth King at a retreat. She's a very wise teacher. I heard her say she wants to live in a way that makes people feel safe to be around her. That's what this living with integrity is. That's what living with wise, with virtue, with ethical behavior. And again, wise action, wise speech in the Eightfold Path supports this, all these precepts. And one of the other paramis that comes a little later is truthfulness, but I want to touch on that now, because wise speech is part of the Eightfold Path, and it falls under this aspect of morality, sila, living with integrity. As I said, they all kind of support each other. Truthfulness is not just lying, not just being deceptive, watching out for delusion, because it's so easy for us to get caught in delusion, this, oh no, everything's fine, blah, 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 or whatever our story is, this dismissiveness, this numbing of ourselves, this inability to be present for the moment. But truthfulness is also how we communicate with each other, you know? The Buddha taught when you're in communication with others, not just speaking, but in our age, all the social media, even emails, how do you communicate? Is it truthful? Is it necessary? You can say a lot of things that are true, but may not be necessary. I have saved myself multiple times on Facebook by asking myself that question. Is this necessary? No, damn it. I want to say it, but it's not necessary. And I don't want to go there. Are you saying it kindly? You can say difficult things kindly. Is it the right time? And what's your intention? You can be truthful. You can be timely. You can say it kindly. But what's your intention behind it? So all these qualities, all these things we have to pay attention to. And two other things around truthfulness, wise speech. Buddhism also has a lot of times this very a bad rap for being the teachings that doesn't allow you to say things that need to be said. Like, oh, if I tell somebody that, they'll be unhappy. So that's not wise speech. That's not what wise speech is about. Wise speech is about saying what needs to be said. If somebody is causing harm, that needs to be said. Absolutely. Otherwise, you're just in denial. It doesn't mean that everybody's going to like what you say. Even if it's truthful, even if you say it kindly, they may not approve. They may not like it. They may get pissed off. But we have to do what needs to be done. That's really important. And that is a spiritual bypass that you see in a lot of communities, a lot of Buddhist communities. Oh, I can't do that. It's not wise speech. It's like, yes, it is. If it needs to be said, it needs to be said. But making sure you're holding it in the container of wise speech. The other piece about wise speech is, how do you talk to yourself? I was at a class this morning, and we were closing up. It was a Dharma class, and somebody was she was setting the alarm because of the space we're using. We had to set the alarm, and she goes, "I just got shown how to do this on Friday, and now I don't remember because I'm so dumb." Or she said something like that, and because there were three of us there with her, and we all said, "You can't say that to yourself," and it's like, wow, wise speech smackdown. It's like, you can't talk to yourself that way. You know, it was beautiful. But that's true. I've had to use wise speech in my own mind. Dumbass. Oh, no, I don't get to say that. Stupid. Oh, no, I don't get to say that. So that's really important. So that's a piece of this practice. That's a piece of the paramis that I think is incredibly important. The next one is renunciation. And I spoke to that a little bit, you know. Letting go, not martyrdom, but what causes us harm? These habits we may have that are, I was talking to somebody the other day who was talking about themselves, and they still talk about themselves. I think the word he used was train wreck. He says, "I still talk about myself as a train wreck. I'm a train wreck. Ah, my life is a train wreck." And he goes, "It's really not. But I'm attached to that idea of being a train wreck and talking about all this stuff. It's like this self-view. We have these ideas of who we are or who we think we are or who we used to be or what we think we should be. And we hold on to them. But it causes discomfort. It's like it's not quite right. It's not really truthful. But how do I let it go?" And renunciation is part of that. A, in that particular aspect, there's truthfulness, but also, can you let go of what doesn't serve? That's what renunciation is. Let go of what doesn't serve you or others. And Rick Hansen says, if you're going to let go, what are you going to put in its place? You know, you don't want to let go into a vacuum. You want to have this intention as you move forward. Oh, if I'm going to let go of sarcasm, what am I going to put in its place? If I'm going to let go of this really thinking I need to be this person that everyone likes, what am I going to put in its place? Let somebody not like me. What does that feel like? And then deal with all those feelings that may arise around that, the emotions that may show up around that. But renunciation is extremely important. The next piece is wisdom. We have to understand the Four Noble Truths, the nature of suffering. It's this craving, it's this wanting to be things to be pleasant all the time. Aversion to discomfort. You see that everywhere. I want more, I want more, I want more. We live in a society, more, you know, how many billions is enough? Probably less than one is enough. You know, but people can't, it's this, it breeds on itself. And so to have that clarity, to see how much pain, how much suffering is caused by craving, aversion, delusion, ignorance. You know? Have that clarity to see the nature of suffering and be willing to move towards ending suffering, to see that things are impermanent. So we can't latch on to this, if I get this, I'll live happily ever after. It's not going to happen. How can you greet impermanence? How can you greet loss? Can you be with it? And to see ourselves as conditioned beings, that things shift and change all the time, and to see through our conditioning and be willing to let go of it. Just complete peace, let go, complete peace. So there's the compassion that I touched on and comes up later in loving kindness, and then there's the wisdom piece. It's these two wings of awakening, compassion and wisdom. You have to have this wise heart. So the next one is energy. And that's this effort to let, this is again part of renunciation, part of intention. It's to see where you're stuck. To see where when you're caught up in the craving mind, when you're, let's say, to use a simple example, to know when the hindrances are present, and the hindrances are craving or aversion, restlessness or dullness or doubt. If they're present, can you let them go and cultivate something in its place, like stillness, loving kindness? The four efforts are recognizing when the mind is caught up in unwholesome or unskillful thoughts, the willingness to let them go, recognizing when the mind is caught in, or not caught, but there's a skillful experience, and to cultivate that, keep that there. So that's what we're doing in meditation, releasing what takes us away and practicing staying. So that's effort. Mm-hmm. And then this next one I like too, which is patience. Patience can be challenging. I was almost going to say I was a terrible person on the freeway this morning, but perhaps I behaved in an unskillful way. Maybe I can say that instead. I was actually heading to that class, and I was doing, 65, 67, whatever it was. And all of a sudden, I noticed somebody was right up in my, like this, in my rearview mirror, which my reaction is, I'm going to slow down. And of course, I did slow down. And I slowed down to 65. I was doing the speed limit, and I was watching them go behind me because they couldn't quite get around me. and it's like, that person didn't have patience. Now, it wasn't my job to teach them patience, but I'm not enlightened yet, so I'm still going to do those things. But patience is, Gil Fronsdell said, patience is only necessary when we're not happy with the way things are. If we were happy with the way things were, we probably wouldn't need patience because we would be at ease in the present moment. You know, when I see people who are impatient, oftentimes there's other stuff going on, especially if they get like all crazy and yell and scream. And I try and remember that. It's because patience, when I'm impatient, I'm not in the present. I'm in the future. Usually what's going to happen, I'm going to be late, or in the past. And it's like, all I can deal with is right now. It may be unpleasant right now. It may be uncomfortable, but how do I work with that unpleasantness and that discomfort? That person eventually got around me. And they went on their way. And I'm like, bye. So, and I was thinking as I was doing it, it's like, Mary, this is not skillful. This is not why you should be doing this. But I did it anyway. The next thing is truthfulness, which I spoke about. And then determination, which is basically just this willingness to stay the course. Because we because we don't have patience so much of the time. And you see people come to practice and they yay, this is great. And then it starts getting challenging. And then they're out the door. I'm going over there because that one promised me enlightenment in 7 weeks. And you said, I don't even get to check in with my progress for 10 years. Because that's what the Dalai Lama said, check in with your spiritual progress every 10 years or so. You know, to break that idea of it's got to be now, now, now. Again, we live in this culture that's got achieve, 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 get, produce, go, do, this crazy capitalistic story that isn't necessarily true. And really? Do I have to do that? Some of you may be familiar with the Knapp ministry, the bishop, and she just wrote a book called, I think it's called, it's very similar to this, Rest is Revolutionary, where we say no to that, that hamster wheel that everyone is on, and even or especially with our spiritual practice. It's not something that happens overnight. The Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, he was spent years in a really intense practice. And according to the tradition, multiple lifetimes before that. So it takes a long time. Be patient. I'm very far from awakening. I have no expectations. I'm walking in that direction. I've come a hell of a lot far. I've come a long way. Much more at ease in my life right now. There's a tremendous amount of ease that is extraordinary. That I did not know I even wanted because I didn't know it existed. And it's like, what are you even talking about anyway? But the suffering is not there. The contracted mind, the fear and the what if and the if only, so much as that has dissipated. Because I'm willing to stay even when it's challenging or when it seems to be boring and nothing's happening. This doesn't work. Nothing's happening. But you keep doing it and keep doing it and keep putting one foot in front of the other. We stay the course in spite of the messiness of it all. And then the last two pieces of this parami teaching is loving kindness and equanimity. And I think loving kindness and equanimity, they're two qualities of the heart practices. You know, the Brahmaviharas, there's loving kindness and compassion and appreciative joy and equanimity. It's that heart that's open to the world. It's this undefended heart. It's this heart and mind, this wise heart that is able to greet everything with wisdom and compassion. It's an appropriate response to whatever the situation is. It's a willingness to be intimate with our experience without preference. Without preference. That's the hardest thing. It's like, I want that. I want that. It's like, this is the way it is right now. It doesn't mean we don't work towards changing things for the better. It doesn't mean that at all. It means, okay, this is the way it is right now. How do I hold this moment? How do I hold right now? And if we see injustice, we work toward ending injustice. If we see something wrong, we work towards ending that. Whatever that the bigger picture is. But how do we greet right here, right now? As best we can. And these qualities of patience, these qualities of truthfulness, these qualities of generosity and ethical behavior, that all supports this. Because we have this developed this steadiness of mind. A teaching that kind of goes hand in hand with this is the seven factors of awakening, which the foundation of is mindfulness. And then the mindfulness, we have the effort, the same effort that's here, the energy, recognizing when we're caught up perhaps in the hindrances, recognizing when they're not present. That's that steadiness of mind. And then the curiosity, the discernment of what is this? You know, we investigate what's going on. What is this? So we have this clarity, this wisdom. And then as you have this mindfulness that is willing to let go of things that are unskillful and have this clarity around your experience, there's a joy and a tranquility that arises. This tranquility that's not dependent on outside circumstances. And when you have that steadiness that's not dependent on outside circumstances, you have this collectedness of mind, this steadiness, which then moves into equanimity. So these teachings all kind of move and go and come over here and go over there, but they're all moving in the same direction. It's setting a course. It's an intention. The paramis are a beautiful container for intention. I think they're really helpful. The Eightfold Path is a container for intention. Sets us walking in the direction we want to go in. And my friend Kevin Griffin wrote about intention. He said, intention gives clarity, direction, and resolve on the path. With right intention, we are never entirely lost, no matter how much we stray. Right intention guides us back to ourselves and the values of kindness and wisdom. So if we have an intention to move in this direction, and we have this container that we say, you know what, I think this is good. These are some qualities that I want to cultivate. Or there's a particular part, a particular quality that I really need to work on, patience or truthfulness or generosity, whatever it is. When we meet something, it's like, which is the direction do I go in? What would this quality tell me? What would wise speech say? What would generosity have me do? Allow that to be your foundation. Allow yourself to land there. That's the wisdom. That's where the freedom lies. When you have this groundwork, this foundation that will take you in an incredibly liberating direction. So I want to thank you for your kind attention and invite you to reflect and see where you might be stuck and see what might be where you need to go in all of this. As I think I said it before, but if not, I'll say it now. Start where you are. That's what I did say before. It's like you can't start over there. It's like, what is present for you in this moment, and what is... you know, what might be the guiding intention for you right now? That's what you want to reflect on. And even if it's not really clear, if you have one step, you take that step, and then the next, and then trust that the next thing will appear. That's when I quit trying to figure it all out and get every step of the way for the next 14 years. It was a lot more freeing, and I just had one step, and then the next became clear, and then took that step, and then the next became clear. So just start where you are, because there ain't nowhere else anyway. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so much, my friends. Thank you for visiting Undefended Dharma. These teachings are freely offered. However, if you would like to make a donation to help support the technology that makes these podcasts possible, please visit marystankavich.org/support. Thank you.